So I think you'll get a better look. We'll be able to maybe dissect Timmins' game a little bit more tonight than we were in Dallas.
Yeah, let's see what David Alter thinks. David Alter of Sports Illustrated Media Group, inside the Maple Leafs reporter. David, were you surprised to see Brody slot in on the third pair alongside Timmins, or you like that combo for now?
I'm not surprised in the sense that I'm more surprised that he was coming back into the lineup, and I wondered to myself if this was kind of not necessarily being pushed forward, but with Victor Mete not being available and needing a roster spot because the injury doesn't sound like it would be one where you would put on injured reserve that you needed to spot. And so instead of running a Hollowell Timmins double right shot inexperienced kind of pair, you get TJ Brody back in there, and then being on that third pair just kind of makes sense because the top four and the way they have played as of late have really played to the point where you really don't want to kind of make any sort of change unless you feel mid-game you have to, and that's kind of the hedge bet there with Brody there in that spot that if something does go wrong, okay, well then we can move Brody up and kind of, you know, whether it's the left or the right side, make the adjustment as Sheldon Keefe sees fit.
Yeah, I guess like it's possible that he could move him around, right? Like he's a chess piece in a way where if you want to get him a defensive zone shift, you could toss him out there maybe with Sandin or with Giordano and maybe be dependent and he could kind of be a little bit of a Swiss Army knife. Would you envision maybe that being something that we see with TJ Brody where he plays with a couple of different guys tonight?
Yeah, I mean, Sheldon Keefe actually brought that up that he expects he'll play with everybody tonight. So I imagine it's going to be one of those situations where just based on what the LA Kings throw at the Toronto Maple Leafs and kind of seeing where he's at, that he envisioned mixing and matching things. And it makes sense. I mean, TJ Brody as a third pair is not optimal, but TJ Brody coming back from a 3-week injury and only getting one full practice in, even though he's been cleared for a few days, is thus where you kind of have to see how he feels and how he responds. And if everything is as it was on Tuesday, where they kind of mentioned that, he went through a practice in the oblique, didn't have any sort of negative feels after taking a few bumps in that practice session, that, yeah, he can come back and feel good. But he admitted in a conversation today that nothing replicates a game, and you won't really know until he kind of takes that first body check at high speed against the opponent to kind of really see where TJ Brody is at.
Yeah, you mentioned it might be a concern, just the lack of bodies they have on the blue line right now as a result of injury. Victor Mete went down, like you mentioned, but Mark Giordano is playing minutes and minutes and minutes and minutes and playing out of his mind. Do you think there's any concern, maybe on the Maple Leafs' part? I know Mark Giordano likes to play as much as possible, but from a team perspective, that they might be overplaying him right now?
I don't know this for a fact, but I can imagine that the sports science people and the people who look at the trackers that they put in every player's body for practice and games and coming
back, they're knocking
back
down the doors.
They're just like, all right, this is fine, but in an ideal world, we don't like this. It's one of those things where you look at those two games. You've got 23 minutes in that game against Dallas, 25 against Tampa. And as much as Mark Giordano loves it, because you ask any veteran player, they don't want to have to start and stop. They want to play as much and as long as possible because they feel that helps them get into a rhythm, especially as a defenseman, because you're not really going high full octane like a forward. It's really more about positioning and a lot of the stuff that way that can allow you to play into your later years like Mark Giordano has been able to do and do so effectively. So it's just more so about what's optimal, what works, what doesn't work. And at some point or another, they're going to want to dial the throttle a little bit back on Mark Giordano. And a fully healthy TJ Brody will do that, because if you looked at some of the underlying stats, Brody with Hall was actually pretty good as well,
yeah,
if not better, before he went down. And then putting Giordano back with Liljegren, who's had success there, also works. But it's just a matter of not changing all of those pairs right at once with Brody. And so when you look at it, it's like, okay, we'll look at the numbers, we'll look at how Giordano's doing, and we'll see how Brody's doing, and then as the game goes along, we'll make those changes based on what the numbers, the sports science, how everyone's feeling is going to be. That's really just the reality of it.
We're chatting with David Alter, Leafs reporter for SI. I thought I saw that Sheldon Keefe also gave a little bit of an update on Morgan Rielly. What was the latest there?
Yeah, so that's an interesting one because you will recall when he suffered a knee injury, there wasn't really a firm timeline. I know Darren Dreger reported that there was a 4 to 6 week kind of rumbling on an MCL strain of a grade one or two. But when we caught up with Maple Leafs GM Kyle Dubas on the road and asked him about it, they didn't put any timeline beyond the LTI frame for his injury, which was the 10 games in 24 days that he was mandated to kind of sit. So that's coming up. That's December 17th. And the update on Morgan Rielly is that he is not put on a pair of skates yet. And even though he's healing and he's working out with the team away from the ice, I got to think that the fact that he's not on the ice yet suggests to me that that December 17th, 4 week portion of that 4 to 6 week timeline seems to be off the table. Like it could change, but it's one of those things where if he's not on the ice yet, and usually you see a couple of weeks, especially with a knee injury, that that's probably going into perhaps the new year, which is where that 6 week frame is. And just given the way the Leafs defense is going right now, there really isn't any urgency to bring him back sooner. So it's still not clear. The timeline for when Morgan Rielly can come back is not clear, but it doesn't sound like that LTI timeline that they were initially putting in is going to be the case. It certainly looks like it's going to be longer than the December 17th eligible return for Morgan Rielly.
Gotcha. Well, you never want to be without that guy, but they're chugging along pretty well on that completely decimated blue line without him, which is impressive to watch. The other roster updates today, David, Dvorkin Chinsev goes back to the Marlies. Malgin in, Simmons out. Do you see the fourth line kind of in the bottom of the roster in general kind of rotating like that throughout the entirety of the season? Like, we were looking kind of this year for the fourth line to have a real set identity, but do you see it going more in the way that Sheldon Keefe has opted to go for the beginning of the season, in that he's going to put players in situationally game to game based on the matchup they kind of see coming?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was kind of interesting that Sheldon Keefe actually dropped that Wayne Simmons going to play on Saturday against the Calgary Flames. So there already seems to be that sort of winger fourth line rotation plan. I think the other thing too is for the first time in a week or so now, the fourth line is actually listed as the fourth line, because for a long time that bottom six had Camp on the fourth line, even though they played third line minutes, and it was kind of a jumble because, you know, David Camp is a third line center, but there were wingers on the third line that kind of replicated more of a third line kind of look. And now that they've kind of situated Alex Kerfoot with Camp and Engvall as that third line, that does seem to be stable in that spot. And then you've got Aston Reese, Pontus Holmberg, who's played himself to becoming an everyday center with Toronto, and then, the interchangeable winger. But, I mean, a lot of that's going to be Nick Robertson as well. Like, he's got to continue to show good numbers, help guys like Tavares and Marner continue to produce. And as long as he's doing that and stays in that bottom six and Cale Yarncroke's not in the lineup, then that fourth line is going to kind of be static. And Dennis Malgin is going to have to prove on a daily basis that he needs to stay in that lineup. So there's those interchangeable parts, but the Nick Robertson one is still going to be a question. And then when Cale Yarncroke does come back, then it's a question of what the Leafs do there, because that's also not clear.
We're chatting with David Alter, and the team currently on a 12-game point streak. They're 9-0-3 over the course of that stretch. I was digging into the numbers a little bit, and I noticed that 65% of the team's goals in this stretch has come from the Big Four. I don't know how sustainable that is, Dave. So is there somebody outside of that Big Four here kind of pointing to and think that maybe we need to get a little bit more from this guy?
Yeah, I mean, I think then there's a couple of guys that stand out. Obviously, Nick Robertson's got to be a guy who produces a bit more. Alex Kerfoot's got to have more than two goals this season. Mm. Like, I think that's number one. You know, he was driving a lot of the lines in the top six for the last couple of years, and being that guy who would just have the time and space in there. Michael Bunting's got to kind of helped pick up the slack, though, although I really liked his game with Matthews and Nylander as of late. But Alex Kerfoot's really got to kind of drive the offense. And in conversations I've had with him, he seems to be pretty hard on himself about that, just kind of wanting to really kind of push the pace. And even though he's doing good things defensively, he knows that the offense has to pick up the slack. The other thing, too, about that is before that, the core four wasn't scoring at all.
Yeah.
So a lot of that is the regression to the mean, too, because when the Leafs were struggling in October, we were talking about how guys like Austin Matthews were, even though they were notorious for being slow starters, he wasn't scoring at the clip that was expected. And you could still kind of make that case from a goal-scoring standpoint. Well, and John Tavares kind of picked it up. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No. I think that's why, like, I looked at that statistic and looked at it more so as not concerning, but, you know, they're not going to score 65% of the goals. They're not going to have a 16% combined shooting percentage the rest of the way. So there are other guys, other depth players who are going to have to step up that just haven't quite done that yet.
Especially when you consider the way the Leafs have lost in the playoffs the past couple of seasons when goal scoring just seems to have dried up.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I can't remember. I think Austin Matthews' shooting percentage at one point got down to something really low.
3% like it was, at one
that's
point.
That's right.
Yeah.
So a lot of it was just kind of bringing that back to the average. So they get that going. And then the hope at this point is if the core four forwards start to slow down, Alex Kerfoot starts to pick it up and get goals again, right? So either him or, you know, Cale Yonkrook was starting to get some of those goals, but he also had a pretty low goal scoring percentage as well. So they weren't getting that third line scoring and they weren't kind of fixing things up from that standpoint. So yeah, I for sure though, the core four guys are going to be in that situation where they're not going to be putting up points all the time. Mitch Marner's point streak isn't going to go forever as much as we'd like it to. And it's been a fun thing to watch and it continues to go right now, going for 21 tonight. So all those things are going to come to a head at some point. It's just going to be a matter of, okay, who's going to be the unsung hero when those guys don't score? And you can certainly point to a lot of candidates like Nick Robertson and Alex Kerfoot, for sure.
That's David Alter of Sports Illustrated on the phone. And David, tonight the Leafs will have a look at their former draft pick in Sean Durzi, Toronto boy too. So that always adds a little bit when teams come through here and they have like a third of their roster from the greater Toronto area. But this might be the most excessive case I've ever seen in my entire life. Is 200 friends and family at the game just like the most excessive thing you've ever heard in your life?
He bought 200 tickets?
I hope that he didn't buy them because that's like his
That's ELC. How it works. Like they get a couple
I know,
that they're
but
given
I hope
can
that
get them from some teammates, but you don't get
no, they don't
tickets.
Get any tickets. Road teams and home teams in Toronto do not get any tickets. Players pay for those tickets. They pay for them, right?
So it's in an allotment, yeah.
Yeah.
Like for two per, and then you really have to kind of just go with like other players hoping for Europeans. We're not going to use their allotment and other staff. Pool those and then kind of find. Look, if you have friends and family in here, it's not hard to find some sort of bulk group rate for tickets and look at secondary ticket markets and all those kind of things to kind of get everyone going together. Are they all going to be in the same section? I doubt it. I'm sure they're going to be sprinkled all around just because of the way availability for tickets go. But,
but think about how much that would cost. How much does that cost?
It's obscene.
It's in Toronto. It's not like this is in Columbus. Like this is in Toronto.
Well, maybe you're hoping for your friends and family members to pull their weight, right? Like you get the tickets, but I don't think it's reasonable necessarily that you're paying for everything. If you want to go, I'll hook you up with access, but I can't cover absolutely everybody.
Right.
I'm sure it's like a wedding party where it's like some people are at the head table and you cover them,
right.
And the rest of them are just kind of like, well, you know, you got to show up your, you know, the wedding gift has to hold the value of at least more than what it's costing for your meal.
Yeah. I want the report from Section 20 post-game in the bowl where all the visiting team, family, and friends hang out. Like, it's going to have to be a meet and greet with Sean Durzi. He's just going to have to line the 200 folks up and just run them through the gauntlet. It's craziness.
Yeah. Yeah, but those are always fun, you know? Like, we always hear about the friends and family and those players just really wanting to have a big game because they're playing in front of an audience that they see. And so, you know, Toronto, there you always hear that myth and everyone kind of like the Leafs always say how hard it is to play in Toronto. But hey, it's a fact. The reality is that the opponents do get up for playing here, whether it's during the week or on hockey night on that Saturday, because it's just, they just know that there's an audience. So they really want to put their best foot forward.
He did score his first National Hockey League goal against the Toronto Maple Leafs last year.
Everybody does. It seems.
Yeah, he did. We're chatting with David Alter from Sports Illustrated. David, we've kind of been, I don't know, we've been having a fun throwback Thursday type of
day. We're off the rails a bit.
We had Erin Ambrose on, and she was talking about how they were on, they're on a road trip, a couple of the girls in the PWHPA All-Star Game tomorrow, and they're going up to Ottawa, and we were talking about, you know, who's control of the aux cord, what's the karaoke situation like, and we've been kind of talking about some carpool karaoke. So I got to ask you, to keep on brand and with the theme of today's show, what's your go-to karaoke tune, David?
I have a couple, but my main one is Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen.
That's such a cop-out answer.
What? Why is that a cop-out answer?
First of all, way too long of a song to have as your karaoke
song. Gotta make it last.
It is a little long.
Everyone gets into it. You don't want to pick an obscure track that the whole place just kind of tunes out. If you're going to do it, you want a song that it's kind of transcends decades, that everyone in the bar or wherever it is going to know. So Bohemian Rhapsody, it hits it. You have to have the falsetto. You have to have the wide range of vocals to hit everything there to make it good. Like, to me, it's not a cop-out. If you can do it and you can do it well, then it brings the house down, and I can speak that from experience. So,
what is your drink of choice before you get on the stage and perform this very excessively long song?
Probably a Ryan Diet Coke, but that's generally my drink of
choice.
Over
under three does it take to get you on stage?
Under one. I can go, like, I'm at the point where I can do that cold turkey. You know, maybe 15 years ago,
that is
when
amazing.
I was a bit more shy, it probably was over the three. But now I could just belt that out.
I love it.
This part right here is always gets people going, too.
Yeah, this probably would. I can see it. It is a little long, but it has so many layers to it.
It does.
It's a good karaoke.
It does.
Dance.
It's not bad. It's growing on me, Dave. It's growing on me. We got to do some karaoke night.
I don't know why it was a cop-out answer. People love it, and if you can do it well, it brings the house down.
Yeah, it's just so tough to do it so well. You know what I mean? It's a tough song to do, but if you can do it, which
practice.
I would love to watch you perform the song, to be honest with you. We should do like a Leafs Media karaoke get together.
It'll happen.
Let's do it.
Amazing.
All right, Dave. Appreciate you taking the time to join us today. Enjoy the game tonight, pal.
You got it. Thanks so much.
All right. David Alter, Leafs reporter inside the Maple Leafs for SI Media Group. Bohemian Rhapsody. I think that's one of those songs where it's like, okay,
you're new Bohemian Rhapsody, okay, well, I'll sit here for the next half an hour and enjoy it.
Yeah, like, it's, I don't want to use the term, you know, it's not like